Chapter 96. For the second time in as many minutes, Summer faced a life-or-death choice. Should she turn back or keep going? She had no idea how far back the ceiling had become submerged. It could be 5 feet or 50 yards. But swimming against the current, light as it was, could make 50 yards seem like a mile. Following her instincts this time, she made a snap decision. She would keep going forward. Kicking and stroking, she propelled herself through the tunnel, her arms and head occasionally bumping into the surrounding stone. Every other stroke, she would raise an arm above her, hoping to break the surface into a pocket of air. But every time, her hand would drag against immersed stone. She felt her heart pounding harder and fought a sudden reflex to exhale as a creeping sense of panic began to set in. How long had she been underwater, she asked herself. A minute? 2 minutes? It seemed like an eternity. But whatever the answer, she knew the more important question was, how many more seconds could she hold out? She tried kicking even harder, but it began to feel like she was swimming in slow motion as her brain labored for oxygen. Her arms and legs felt an odd burning sensation as the effects of hypoxia sapped her muscles. The black water seemed to turn even darker before her eyes, and she no longer felt the salt water stinging them. An internal voice yelled at her to remain strong, but she could feel herself slipping. And then she saw it. A faint green glow appeared in the water ahead of her. Perhaps it was just a trick of the eyes or the first stages of blacking out, but she didn't care. Exhaling what little air was left in her chest, she summoned every last remaining reserve of energy and kicked hard toward the light. Her limbs now burned with fire as her ears rung in a deafening tone. Her heart felt like it was going to beat out of her chest while her lungs ached to explode. But she ignored the pain, the doubts, and the urge to let go, and kept pulling herself through the water. The green glow gradually expanded into a warm light, bright enough to show particles and sediment in the seawater. Just overhead, a silvery gleam caught her eye, appearing like a bowl full of mercury. With her energy failing fast, she kicked upward with a final, desperate surge of strength. Summer emerged from the water like a show dolphin at SeaWorld, rising high into the air before tumbling back with a splash. Gasping and panting for air, she paddled to a nearby rock and clung to its barnacled surface while her oxygen-depleted body tried to restore order. She rested for nearly 5 minutes before regaining the strength to move. Then, in the distance, she heard muffled gunfire, and she remembered her father. Taking her bearings, she found she was in a semi-submerged rock outcropping 100 yards west of the cave. She quickly spotted the Numa Zodiac, tied to the rocks beside 2 other small boats. Plunging back into the water, she circled around the rocks and began swimming toward the boats. Her arms soon felt like lead weights, and several times the surf nearly flung her onto the shoreline rocks, but she managed to reach the boats without collapsing. The Zodiac didn't carry a radio, so she dragged herself onto the deck of the first of the 2 other boats, a small wooden trawler that Zakhar had appropriated. Inside its tiny open wheelhouse, she found a marine band radio and immediately hailed the Aegean Explorer. Dirk, Giordino, and Gunn were all on the bridge when Summer's frantic voice burst over the radio. "Summer, this is Explorer. Go ahead," Gunn replied calmly.
"Rudy, we found the galley inside the cave, but 3 armed men showed up. I escaped, but Dad's still in there, and they're trying to kill him."
"Take it easy, Summer. We're on our way. Try to hide until we get there and keep yourself out of danger." Kenfield had already turned the Explorer around and was accelerating to top speed by the time Gunn hung up the transmitter. Dirk stepped forward and looked out the bridge window. "We're 6 or 7 miles away," he lamented to Gunn. "We'll never get there in time."
"He's right," Giordino said. "Stop the boat."
"What do you mean, stop the boat?" Gunn cried.
"Give us 2 minutes to launch the bullet and we'll get there in a flash."
Gunn considered the request a moment. Even to Gunn, Pitt was more than a boss. He was like a brother. If the tables were reversed, he knew exactly what Pitt would do.
"All right," he said with reservation. Just don't get yourselves killed.
Dirk and Giordino immediately bolted for the door. Al, I'll meet you on deck, Dirk told him. I need to grab something on the way.
Just don't miss the bus, Giordino replied, then disappeared aft.
Dirk hustled down to the ship's lower deck, which housed the crew accommodations. Sprinting to his father's cabin, he burst in, stepping up to a small built-in work desk. Above the desk was a shelf of books, and Dirk quickly scanned their titles. His eyes halted when he spotted a heavy, leather-bound edition of Herman Melville's Moby Dick. Ripping the book off the shelf, he quickly flipped the cover open for a second.
To the great white beast Ishmael, he muttered, then tucked the book under his arm and darted out of the cabin.